Happy last day of summer, everybody. That's right. It's September 20th, 2021. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio, which, as you know, is the voice of the American Consortium for Equity in Education, and everything we do is over at ace-ed.org. Excuse me, ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. All right, this podcast will be archived over there. Our magazine is over there, which is called Equity and Access Pre-K-12, our online journal. You'll love it if you go over there, check it out, Equity and Access Pre-K-12. Again, ace-ed.org. And we're starting a new thing. It's up, SEL Today, Social Emotional Learning, seltoday.org. Please check it out. We're just getting that started, but it looks pretty good over there, and we'd like you to go over, check it out, follow us, see what we're doing. You can follow that over at SEL, the number 2, SEL Today. Okay, so please check it all out. We're proud of what we do, and we'd like to get the word out. Okay, and again, happy last day of summer. Tomorrow's the 21st of September. Time for fall. The leaves are falling. We're staying in New England for a good deal of today's show. As you know, I'm in Maine, where one of my guests is the former education technology director. Now he's the executive director of the Vermont Information Technology Association. That's Jeff Mao. Okay, and it's, let's say the Vermont, let me get this right, the Vermont Information Technology Association for the Advancement of Learning, which is vita-learn.org. Sounds like a food supplement. Enjoy, vita-learn. Okay, and vita-learn.org. And we also have Aaron Lockridge, who helped me set up this show, from Rosen Publishing over at rosenpub.com. So let me bring them on. We're going to be talking about using technology to make sure that all kids can read independently by third grade. That's the great measure. All right, and the world is changing, and we got to make sure this works, and we're able to have technology to do it. Hence, I have two experts in the field. Aaron is the VP of Digital Development over at Rosen Publishing. Jeff's the Executive Director for Vermont Information Technology Association for the Advancement of Learning. Long title. Hi, Aaron. Welcome back to you, first of all.
Good morning, Larry. It's nice to be back.
It's nice to have you back. Indeed it is. Where are you calling from? Are you in Philly?
I am in Philly, right outside in Westchester, Pennsylvania.
That's where I went to college.
No kidding.
Yeah, Westchester grad, Golden Rams. Come on,
oh,
you Rams, fight on for Westchester State to take this game. No, never mind, I won't get into that. Yeah, Westchester grad. I grew up in West Philly, just down Westchester Pike.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Small world then. I'm right in your neck of the woods.
And by the way, when I was in Westchester, yeah, there was nothing to do. Nothing, zero, nada. My high school had more kids than the college. And it was Westchester State College back then. And it's Westchester University now, and it's quite a wonderful school. Right?
It is. And it's a beautiful, charming college town.
It is.
You should get back for a visit. It's really lovely.
Know, it's a long ride from Maine, but I'll tell you, I know
True.
How cool it is there. And believe me, it was not cool when I was there. Okay? It was far. In fact, if you took the word cool and drew a straight line to the exact opposite of cool, it would be about 7,000 miles long, and that's where Westchester was in the late 1960s. Okay, so you would live in a good place, Aaron. Right.
All right. Well, if you swing by with a lobster, I'll have a cheesesteak waiting for you.
Done deal. Done deal. Okay, and I just made a homemade cheesesteak for dinner last night, as a matter of fact. There, you can't get it out of your system. Okay, you really can. And speaking of lobsters and creamies, I'll say creamies for the state of Vermont. Hi, Jeff. I'm Larry.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having me on. And in fact, I'm still here in Maine, just working remotely for Vermont. So
I'm
here. In
where
the
are you?
I'm in Topsom.
You're where?
Yeah. In Topsom.
Get out of here. I'm in Cornish.
Okay.
You know Cornish
yeah,
is?
Not too far.
Yeah,
yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, come visit us. We have the best cheesesteaks in town. I make them. What can I tell you? We do have lobsters here, too. Jeff, do you go to Vermont? Are you in Vermont a lot? This is interesting.
I started with Vita Learn in the midst of the pandemic. So I've been a remote employee And I think even if I lived in Vermont, I'd be a remote employee. So it really makes very little difference.
I was going to ask you where your favorite creamy is, the soft ice cream, but you don't have one. You don't have one.
Yeah, no, no. I just have places like where I like to get a lobster roll.
Yeah, so do I. So do I, you know. Right? It's cool. Yeah, I got to tell you, man, it's good to have you here, both of you. I got to tell you, it's just great to have you here. Using technology to ensure all students are reading independently by third grade. Boy, there's an idea. Okay. Actually, I'm going to ask Aaron this. Aaron, you're VP of Digital Development for Rosen. How has the technology changed? You have to develop this stuff. Okay. And we've got a lot of challenges these days. So just get into that generically. Okay. How has the technology changed to allow something that we always knew we needed to happen?
Sure. So, I mean, I think, you know, the technology has enabled kids to have a couple different things. One, they can have access to far, far more books than they ever have had before. So, you know, certainly they could go into their school library, their public library, they could take books off the shelf. But the difference here is, like, for example, with our Rosen Level Up product, which is a reading program for K to 3, they have access to 2,400 books that they can pick and choose from 24/7 wherever they are. So just simply, you know, engaging kids, getting them interested, providing material that's of interest to them is something that's facilitated by technology. We're also able to support them, not just in the classroom where they're working with their teachers, but at home in their downtime with a parent or a caregiver in the evenings, on the weekends. So, you know, this blended learning, this combination of print and technology in the classroom, and then in other places as well, at home, on the off hours outside of school, you know, just gives them so much more opportunity to practice, to read, to learn, and to develop as readers.
Right. That's nice. It's a good way to say it, I got to tell you. All right. Jeff, talk about your end of technology. You're not in the industry side. You're in the education side, so to speak. Okay, so is Aaron, by the way. I just had to say that right. Okay, talk to me about using technology and how you are using technology, okay, to get these kids up to speed. Jeff Mell.
Well, I think one of the challenges we've always had has been access to whatever, whether it was how many books you had in your library when we were counting volumes.
Good point.
To access the devices. And so, you know, I think what we've seen is an increase, particularly, you know, strangely enough, COVID was the thing that seemed to be the trigger to finally start to distribute more access devices to more kids. Right?
Yeah.
And that gave us a lot more opportunity. But I think we're only at the very beginning of this because, as you know, here in Maine, for example, you know, we've had our one-to-one laptop program going on 20 years now.
Yeah, it's
and
amazing.
And even with 20 years of experience, we're still just scraping the very tippy top of what could be done. And, you know, and people have often asked me if I was, now that I've left MLTI, the Maine Learning Technology Initiative, what would I do if I could do it over again? And, you know, my stock answer has always been, I wouldn't have started at seventh grade. I would have started at kindergarten.
Yeah.
You know, and I think if we could have started with kids at the very beginning, as opposed to seventh grade, then we could have done exactly what we're discussing today, which is attacked early literacy right away. And really start to make that change. You know, that was something we saw here in Maine with the Auburn School District, who years ago started distributing, you know, iPads to kindergartners specifically for early literacy goals. You know, and at the time, it didn't make national news until the Jay Leno show started making fun of him, right? And Jay Leno started talking about it and saying, you know, when's this, you know, kindergarten kids getting iPads? And then, of course, that got the attention of Michael Chow, who was the product manager for iPad at Apple, who, guess what, was from Auburn, Maine. And so right away they had a corporate connection, and you know, his parents still lived in Auburn. He was a graduate of the Auburn school system, and he reached out and helped them out. And, you know, they were the ones who very early saw this idea that, you know, the cost of an iPad compared to the cost of remediation for the kid who doesn't have the reading skills by third grade, that's, you know, it's a no-brainer. And so I'm hoping that's where we're started to head.
Yeah, I hope so too. And I didn't know that Jay Leno anecdote. That's really interesting. Okay, that's really interesting, and good old state of Maine comes through again. And by the way, I just realized you were saying I was through Topsham just the other day on my way to Booth Bay Harbor. There you go, my friend.
Yeah, Group A. That's my other home. I spent 13 summers there when I was a classroom teacher. That's how I survived as a classroom teacher, was spending 13 summers there teaching tennis. That was my summer job.
I'll be darned, okay? Went up to the Botanic Garden to see the trolls, and I don't want to leave Westchester out. Everybody there can go to Longwood Gardens to see their gorgeous gardens. Right, Aaron? We'll get that
absolutely
together. Yeah, it's not a tourism show, everybody. I just wanted to be fair to both sides here, okay? It's
tourism
good stuff.
Food.
Yeah, you know, what can I tell you, all right? But, you know, if this is interesting, okay, the way we look at this, all right, and the whole thing is literacy from the very beginning, and I found it interesting. You know, we gave the kids the iPads grade 7 on, okay, and we're talking about grade 3, which you always knew was really important for reading and all that kind of thing. It's just interesting the way we kind of look at things. We always start things off wrong and then kind of get it back together again. I guess maybe that's just human nature, et cetera. But school populations are changing, all right? And actually, Jeff, I'm going to ask you this first. I make a statement, school populations are changing, all right? But up here in northern New England, all right, are they changing here too? I mean, we're a pretty Caucasian environment up here, let's be honest, okay? It's never been known as a great home of ethnicity, all right? Up here in northern New England. I live in Maine. You're Vermont's thing. Talk to me about it. Are we talking about change everywhere as the needs change?
Yeah, I think
change?
We are. I mean, I think there's literal change in a sense that, as you know, here in Maine, for example, there was a lot of press a number of years ago when we started seeing an increase in the Somali population.
Yeah, up in Lewis.
A lot of refugees coming to Maine. And, you know, and then there was that great story about the soccer team there that won the state title, you know, and this and that. But, you know, so there is a little change. I do see that, you know, the demographic population is shifting. But I think the other reality is, and I know I've talked with educators in Vermont about this, is that in today's day and age, you know, here I am in Maine working for an organization in Vermont supporting schools there. And they know that, you know, where you're going to work may not be where you live. Right. Increasingly with broadband access, we have, and especially now with the pandemic, we have more and more people working remotely. And if you're going to work remotely, you're going to be interacting with people from all over the place. And so that diversity is always there, literally in your backyard or just simply through your phone and your Zoom or however you're interacting. And so the need to kind of create that more culturally responsive and wider understanding of the globe that we live in, you know, is really important. And so I think while the population here in northern New England is maybe shifting slower than what we might see, say, in urban centers, but I think that's normal, right? Rural America in general is always a little slower when it comes to those things. But the world that we interact with, it's very global, right? And we've got folks here working with folks from all over the planet all the time.
That was a great answer, and I appreciate that. That was well thought out. Okay, your thoughts on that, Aaron? And now we can broaden it out away from New England, especially northern New England. Okay, everywhere the student population is changing, and obviously it's changing everywhere. And obviously, to quote my new best friend Jeff, okay, kids are going to be working with people from every possible part of every side of diversity, be it racial, ethnic, socioeconomic, et cetera, they're going into a much different world. Okay, talk about the needs of those students as we develop products, okay, and use digital technology to teach them to read at the early years like we're supposed to. Aaron, by the way, I'll give you a doctorate if you can answer that question. It's a very tough question. It's like all-encompassing. Yeah, go ahead, Dr. Locklidge, if I may. That sounds good, by the way, Dr. Locklidge.
You.
I like that.
So I think, you know, one of the things that we at least have found in Rosen in our long history of publishing is that it's really important for children to be able to see themselves, you know, sort of literally and figuratively. So we're always very mindful when we are creating digital products that we are being inclusive, that there's representation, that there's cultural sensitivity and awareness. Our reading platform has books by, you know, authentic texts by authors from a wide variety of different backgrounds, ethnicities, and so on. So, like, for example, one of my favorite books on the site is one that's called Jelani and the Lock. And it's by Dr. Lorenzo Pace, and he's an artist, he's a storyteller, he's a lecturer, and he in the early 90s was commissioned in New York City to build a monument in honor of the remains of more than 400 African slaves that were found during an excavation. So, you know, this monument called Triumph of the Human Spirit included a lock that was a shackle from his great-grandfather, and he's written this book about his experience as a child called Jelani and the Lock. So it's those sorts of things. I mean, that's only one of many different examples I can give you, but when kids from all sorts of different backgrounds come to, you know, our products, we want them to see themselves and their experience represented. So I think first and foremost, that's really paramount to us. We also can use technology to support students who are not native English speakers. So for example, we have books in Spanish, we have bilingual titles. You know, we know that not all of the kids that are coming to us are necessarily native English speakers, and we want to make sure that they're included as well, and that there's material for them as they learn to read.
And Aaron, let me ask you, I want to take it from the other angle, and this is the key. And I'm going to use Northern New England again. Again, it's not real ethnic up here, all right? It just isn't. Just draw a straight line right across Northern New England. It's not real ethnic. Yet these kids are going to go out into a big, wide, multi-ethnic, multi-diverse world. And I agree wholeheartedly, I know Jeff does too, that it's important, okay, for the kids to see themselves in literature. But the other side is of it, and I know you agree, I just want you to expound on it a little bit, is for kids who don't see a lot of ethnicity, a lot of cultural diversity in their lives, it's important for them to see other people as well, people of different colors, different nationalities, different languages, et cetera. Just your thoughts on that, Aaron.
Yeah, without a doubt.
In the same way,
you know, we want kids to see themselves. We want them to see, you know, one another as well. So whether it's kids that are differently abled, for example, we have books that feature, you know, children that have mobility issues, for example.
Yes. Yep.
But it's important that they not only see their, you know, their peers, other children, but they also understand arts, culture, history, you know, all of those sorts of things that they're looking at in the curriculum. They need to be able to read across the curriculum and see different groups represented too.
And they need to see that at an early age, and hence we get back to literacy at an early age. Okay, so I'm going to swing this over to Jeff. Jeff, you know, Aaron, this show was, I worked with my friends over at Rosen Publishing to put the show together. Aaron's obviously their VP of Digital Development. All right, but Jeff, your goal is to use technology, I'm just kind of encapsulating this, using technology to the best of its educational abilities to make kids literate and make them read at an early age and read independently, if I may, by third grade. So talk about the relationship, Jeff, and what you look for when you look for a partner like Rosen in making that happen. This is your job. Okay, over at VitaLearn. So what's that connection between you and a company like Rosen?
So I think as I'm always seeking out, you know, companies to try and help introduce them to our schools, some of the things that I'm looking for are, you know, in the blanket term, you know, just, you know, we want effective uses of technology. But what does effective uses of technology mean? And I think what we're looking at is we're still continuing to push away at trying to find companies and platforms and tools that help us do some of the things that we know have always been good teaching, but maybe to do them better and maybe differently. And that can be anything from, you know, what we now might coin like an adaptive reading platform, which effectively is kind of what teachers have been trying to do themselves in their own classroom, right? They kind of realize that, you know, I've got a shelf full of books and I need to pick the right book for the right kid to make sure that it's at the right level. And at the same time, those teachers are trying to keep track of who's doing what and how they're doing. And so we're looking for tools that are going to help the teacher do those things that we know have always been effective for instruction. And at the same time, then we're looking at how are technology tools allowing teachers to take what we've always known as good practice and then amp it up a bit. right? And so there's long distance. We've always had this notion of kind of gaining instructional minutes, right? And also what I often refer to as time shifting and cloning, right? There are certain things that just require the teacher to pay attention to, right? It's very difficult for someone right now anyway to say read into a microphone and have a computer try and correct your reading and tell you, oh, you mispronounced that. And, you know, that's a very difficult thing for technology to do today, but people are working on it. They're trying to get there. In the meantime, we need teachers to do that. But, you know, if a teacher has 25 kids in a classroom, they can't do that with every student every day. There's just not enough teacher to go around. And so we start to look at how can technology start to time shift that. Maybe the student simply records what they had to read, and the teacher can try and catch up with it, or another paraprofessional or somebody, another trained person, can help.
There aren't enough of them either.
Students, right?
Yep.
And so
enough.
It's just kind of how do we do this time shifting thing?
You know, and it's interesting. Time, okay? We want kids to learn, but it's all a matter of do we have the time to do it? Okay, so good intro. Aaron, talk to me about Rosen's Level Up, okay? And don't just get really into the nitty-gritty, because all of those things that Jeff was just talking about really matter, okay? And teachers have been trying to buy time to be able to do the right thing for their kids for far too long. Talk about it. Talk about it, please, Aaron. You look at these things
sure.
and develop a product, so go for it.
Absolutely. I mean, one of our major goals is always to save instructional time. We know that teachers have, they have more than they can do in a day, to say the least. So, you know, Jeff mentioned listening to kids read. We are launching later this month a feature that will allow children to read a passage, record themselves, and then that's submitted to the teacher for assessment. So the teacher can listen to that in their free time, during a free period, during a prep
Breaking
period,
news.
And
oh.
assess it then. Yeah,
wow.
So, you know, you don't need to go from kid to kid to kid, desk to desk, and use an entire class period. You can keep that class period for instruction, and you can have the kids each spend just a couple minutes recording a passage and then assess it at a later date.
Wow.
One of the other
wow.
things that, you know, our educator community really loves that's unique to Level Up is that teachers can look at student data and they can easily pinpoint where students are weak in either a skill or that particular state standard. So teachers can see the data for the standards for their state, and then they can take that data, they can identify that weakness, and they can diagnose and prescribe. So what that means is if I see that a student in my class is struggling with cause and effect, for example, I can find that out when I look at the data, and I can actually then go and I can choose books for that student that are going to help them master that skill, and I can assign those books. So again, we're saving teacher time because we're helping them pinpoint, diagnose, and then prescribe things that are going to get that student, you know, where they need to be.
It's good stuff. So which brings me, okay, back to you, Jeff. Aaron said the magic word, as far as I'm concerned, data. All right, do you agree with me? It's the key word.
Yeah.
Okay.
Key
so,
word,
it is a key word. So my question is, are teachers trained enough these days to understand the data that the companies are able to give them now and use it wisely? And my second part of that question, and you probably might have some thoughts on this, teacher prep, speaking of good old Westchester State, teacher prep, okay, and technology. Are the teacher prep schools doing enough to teach future teachers how to work in today's classroom? And again, I'll give you a doctorate if you can answer that one. Data and technology. Okay, it's the whole thesis here, but you got 30 seconds. Go ahead. No, we have as much
sure.
time as you get. Yeah.
As far as are teachers trained enough, I would say that, and this is not to denigrate the school systems that are trying to support the teachers or the teachers themselves, but no, they're not.
Yeah, they're not.
And I think we've always
you're
found
not denigrating
there's never
anybody.
Enough,
they're not.
Right.
Yeah.
There's never
yeah.
enough professional development out there. There's never enough time to do it. And so just like the teachers are challenged to have enough time to instruct their students, we have challenges in finding the time to support our teachers. And so I think there can always be more work that we can do to help teachers understand the data that comes at them. And at the same time, being able to get that data to them in easy, digestible forms. And one of our challenges is simply that, I think we have a kind of political challenge around the collection of data. You know, we want to do what's right with it, but at the same time, it scares us, right? And we see it happening in the consumer world so much with data. And so I think it slows down our industry's ability to collect the data that we really need to really be able to make those good diagnostic decisions. Because that big data set, if we had it, is really useful, particularly as we talk about places like, say, Northern New England, and you might get a student who's a, you know, an immigrant who's a native something else speaker, and that teacher's never worked with a student who was, you know, a native, say, Hindi speaker, and English was their second language, right? But big data might be able to inform that person. Well, people whose first language was Hindi, these are some of the challenges that we see, and relative to them, here's where we need to be looking. Right. But that's something that, you know, that's experience that you can gain through data as opposed to real world activity, which is difficult to do. Right. Some people may have that luxury because they live in such a diverse population. They say, oh, I've worked with plenty of kids who, you know, come from homes who spoke that language as a first language. And that's here's the challenges for them. But that's just not the case for most of us. And so on the prep side.
Yeah.
I think they're doing a pretty good job, but not a great job. And I think, you know, it's as much of a failure of our own, so to speak, when I say our own, is, you know, having worked in the Department of Ed in Maine for 10 years and on that program and trying to work with our higher ed, you know, it was really tough to see change happen at the higher ed level, just like it's tough to see change at the K-12 level. And the two are so intertwined. And so they kind of slowly march together, but very slow.
Yeah, well, the only answer I'll give you is a funny one, okay? Yeah, change hurts. But to fix somebody who's got a bleeding problem, we don't put a leech on them anymore, okay? change hurts, okay? But we have to move forward, and we can't be scared of this, especially in this crazy day and age where if we start to do something right now, it's obsolete tomorrow. Okay, we have to be thinking tens like a jet plane pilot. You have to be thinking 100 miles in front of the plane. Okay, because you're going to be there before you know it. All right, it's that simple. You know, and it's difficult to do. And on that note, Aaron, back to you. You developed these great products over at Rosen. Okay, like Level Up. All right, but now you have to go in, and you guys do this. Is what I want you to talk about. And show teachers how to use the tool, how to actually use and teach with it, and then read the data from it and use that to teach further. Talk about how you developed the PD part of all the wonderful things you do.
Aaron. So we have, I will flat out say that our PD team is genius. So I have such massive respect for them and the relationships they build with the educators they serve. I think one of the things, pardon me, that we make clear at the outset is that we are not going to replace reading teachers. You know, technology is never going to replace a teacher. We are a tool, and we are there to help their students learn. We're there to help save them time, make their job easier, but we have such respect for what they do. So we are very much in partnership with them. Communication with the teacher is incredibly important. I think we also work very hard to get buy-in from the building at the principal level, at the district level. You know, teachers sometimes feel like they're trying to go it alone, and they need that institutional support to carve out time for them, to get additional training for them. So those are a couple big pieces. When it comes to data, one of the things that we try to really pinpoint is how much data an individual teacher needs. The data that a teacher needs may be very different than a principal at the building level needs or than a district administrator at the district level needs. We structure our data intentionally so that the things that we know a classroom teacher is going to want and need to see are front and center all the time.
Good.
If you only need a few key facts, you need to know how many books your child has read, how many minutes they've spent reading, and what their quiz scores are. As a teacher, you can see that immediately. we have well over 100 data points. So if you are a data junkie and you want to dig down and really crunch those numbers, we'll give all of that to you. But if you don't, we're not going to kind of overwhelm you and bog you down in a lot of figures that are not going to be useful for your day-to-day instructional practice. So
well
I
said,
think really kind of identifying what teachers need is key.
You do that all the time. You guys do that all the time. And you said something at the very beginning of that last statement. I must ask, are teachers still concerned? I'll ask Jeff this too. But are teachers still concerned that technology is going to replace them? Do they really still think that? Are you finding that?
I don't know that. I don't think they think they're going to be out of a job by any means, no. But I think teachers as a profession, I come from a family of educators, so mm-hmm. I can speak, you know, from what I've heard from them say. They don't always feel as valued as they should be. You know, my opinion is that they are
that I agree with.
Pivotal in our society. And I think
that
they sometimes feel as though districts are investing in technology as opposed to in their people. And that can lead to them feeling, you know, not so motivated.
I think what you just said is a very important point. Okay. School districts invest in technology because that's the way of the world these days. These are the tools we need. It's like a hospital investing in a CAT scan machine, okay, or an MRI. It doesn't eliminate mm-hmm. the people they need to you to run that machine and understand that machine and work with that machine. But those machines
exactly.
cost money. And I hope that fear of technology replacing an educator, okay, is going to just literally disappear. Okay, what we need to do, and Jeff, you probably would agree with this, is spend a lot more time in college and in PD teaching educators how to use the technology so they, again, I'm going to say, instruct their kids and buy back time. Right, Jeff?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's also a question of just it's a lot about the leadership and a lot about understanding of how we're spending. You know, I think as Aaron said, you know, people see us investing in technology and school systems and the perception sometimes, which comes from the way in which things are communicated from leadership, can sometimes make you feel devalued. And on the other hand, this is where
yep.
I think government can really help. You know, when we started the MLTI program in Maine, and as it continues today, the cost of putting a laptop in the hands of every 7 through 12 kid in the state of Maine is less than 0.5% of the education spent
wow.
in the state. We spend more money on diesel fuel to drive the buses than we do the laptops. And that included the professional development and the technical support and the software
wow.
and the wireless networks. All that stuff costs less than the diesel, but it's very present. And it was a change, and so people perceived it as really expensive, when the whole point, as we knew, was all about the teacher. It was about trying to help the teacher, and it was all about the kids and trying to help the kids and give them greater access. But the press fixates on the technology and the shiny boxes, and so it distracts people from what's really going on. And that can be unfortunate. And I think, you know, all of us who've worked in the ed tech side, I think the most important thing we've always tried to tell people is we buy this technology to empower you.
That's
to empower
right.
your students.
That's right.
Right. It's not about replacing you. It never has been. And the most important thing in any classroom is the teacher. Always has been and always will be.
I couldn't agree with you more on all of that. And you know, the great challenge of education in that regard is that everybody who's responsible for buying things and the community, the parents, everybody went to school. So they remember school when they went 20 years ago, all right? And things change, just like your cell phone changes. You used to have to have a camera and a cell phone, and you have to take the film to Photomat. You don't have to do that anymore. Things change, all right? And it's not like it was when we were a kid, all right? It's that simple, especially when I was a kid, when there were dinosaurs and we wore togas, okay? And Westchester State College had less kids than my high school did, okay? Things change. We have to make sure. And that, by the way, I just did a show earlier today with the National School Public Relations Association. The whole thing is about communications. You said it. inside and outside, internal and external. It's that simple. I want to ask you a simple question. Aaron, what technology, what competencies does a K-3 educator need, really and truly, to make sure that they can work with all the tools you provide them and do so much better for their students? What do they really need? I mean, they can all work a computer. That's what they need, right? What do, tell me.
I mean, really, honestly, yes. That really is it. I mean, we do not require any, you know, intense technical skills by any means. You know, our Level Up program, for example, is designed expressly for the pre-K to 3 experience. Even the teacher experience is designed to be fairly simple. These kids don't need a ton of bells and whistles at this age group. You know, they need an experience that will help them focus. So I would say in terms of competencies, you know, we hope and we generally see that our educators are engaged and enthusiastic. And we need them to communicate with their kids, with the parents and caregivers, and with us. Beyond that, these programs really require no more technical skills than they already come to the table with.
You just said something that's so important, and we sometimes forget this. We always want the kids to be enthusiastic and engaged, okay? But we also want the teachers to be enthusiastic and engaged. And if we can present them with a program that works, that saves them time, and lets them show off their training and their expertise, okay, we're 100% better all the way down the line. Jeff? Disagree with that. Go ahead. Beat me up. Go ahead. No, you can't disagree with that.
No, I do agree with that. But I think that the place that I think we often forget to go to in order to create that time is to look at teachers and everyone who works in our school. Everyone works everywhere. And you really look at your fundamental tech skills. You know, how well can you maneuver through a word processing document? Because when you really look at it, teachers spend a lot of time creating stuff. And I watch teachers, I stand over their shoulders and I watch them work on a computer. And I can produce and format and move things around on a screen way faster than they can because I just have really good basic foundational tech skills. But I gain huge amounts of time that way. And that's the time that we can get back for our teachers. And I think sometimes they forget because they fixate on learning the Level Up platform. They know how to work that, and it's great, but then they discover I only have 20 minutes to deal with it because I have to do this other drudgery that they don't realize is drudgery because they've gotten so used to the idea that it just takes me this much time to type up a worksheet, right? And they've actually wasted an hour and a half trying to format the thing and make it look pretty so it'll print right.
Yeah, you know, it's so amazing, and but what you just said goes right back to what we've been talking about this whole time. You put the technology in there like Level Up, okay? It will teach kids. If a teacher does it right, all right, they'll be teaching kids and have much better learners and readers by grade 3. It's that simple. And if they can put all this together, the time that they'll save is incredibly important. It just all works. It just all works, and we got to keep making it work, and that's both of your jobs. I'm just here to talk about it. You guys do the actual trench work, and I can't thank you enough for doing that. Jeff, this is really great to know you, my Topsom friend.
Yeah, it's good to be on the show. Good to meet you.
Well, come back.
I'm amazed we haven't run into each other before. Cause
well, we will. We will from now on. Next time I go to Booth Bay, I'm staying at your house overnight. That's all there is to it. Yeah. My wife, a couple of kids, the rest of the family. Won't be much, just a few lobsters. Simple enough. And Aaron, next time I go to Westchester, which I haven't been to in years, okay, I'll think of you.
Absolutely. Okay. You'll have to come knock on the door.
I will do that. Usually we arrive around midnight, just 7 or 8 of us. Okay, no problem. All right, now you guys were terrific, really. Thank you both so much. You do such hard work, and I'm glad we can help get the word out, okay? Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Aaron. I'll be
Thank
in
you.
Touch with both of you. Take care.
Thank
bye-bye.
You.
Oh,
Thank
you're
you.
Welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, that was a great show, if I do say so myself. Jeff Mail, Executive Director for the Vermont Information Technology Association for the Advancement of Learning, which is vita-learn.org, V-I-T-A, and Aaron Lockledge from my good friends over at the Rosen Publishing, rosenpub.com, and she's VP and does a damn good job of digital development over there. She's great. Okay? And in Westchester. All right, I'm Larry Jacobs. Check out what we do at seltoday.org, and we'll archive this show at ace-ed.org. Hey, I'm Larry Jacobs. Thanks for listening. Happy end of summer.